football on off the ball.
Brian Mbeumo is a fantastic character as well as a fantastic footballer. Yeah. And that's what Manchester United need. You know, you know what United have been missing. They've been missing leaders, responsibility takers.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Run on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Wednesday night's Off the Ball. You are welcome to the K Club. It is the eve of the first round of the 2025 Amgen Irish Open. We are live from the members' room in the clubhouse on the Palmer course. And throughout this evening's show, for the first 2 hours, we're going to be hearing from Rory McIlroy, Shane Lowry, Patrick Harrington, Brooks Koepka, Luke Donald, and plenty more before the football show between 9 and 10. We have Michael McCarthy here on site beside me. Hello, Mick.
Good evening, all.
Nathan Murphy, putting in the hard yards over the last couple of days, is here. Hello, Nathan.
Hey, all.
And Cameron Hill is back in studio, ready to give us a news round very shortly. Cameron, how are you?
Hey, friends.
So today was the Pro-Am here on the course. Nathan, I mean, you've played this Pro-Am before, but it turned out this year, unless you were on the British and Irish Lions Tour, or unless you won Liam McCarthy, or unless you won Sam Maguire, you weren't allowed to hit a ball. So Nathan Murphy was out of the picture.
Here I am, still hanging around 12 hours later, clubs in the back of the car. If anybody pulled out, first reserve, please let me in. And the call just never came, thankfully, for the... Maybe we should start calling the people who attend the Irish Open patrons?
I think so. I think that's only fitting, really. I was paying close attention to the leaderboard on the Pro-Am today.
You really were. I kept getting updates. It was like, nobody really cares.
No one cares. I am the only person who cares. Well, maybe except for the people who are actually playing, but I'm the only patron who actually cares about the scores in the Pro-Am. And the reason why I cared is that the tree ball of Ronan Maher, Paddy Clifford, and David Clifford were doing exceptionally well. They finished on 31 under par and came second in the Pro-Am. I'm not sure what you get if you win the Pro-Am, to be quite honest with you, but maybe it's just pride. One off the 32 under score that came with Jonathan Beggs
and
Tom McKibben group.
One thing about golf, pride is never the prize. There's always something.
The prize is the prize. Yeah. We should find out what it was.
We're going to hear from a couple of the people on the Pro-Am a little bit later on. We spoke to Ronan Maher on the 9th green earlier on this afternoon. You were paying close attention, Nathan, but you're also busy going from press conference to press conference. The presidential race conversation seems to have infected every single area of Irish society over the past couple of days, and the Irish Open's no different.
We don't have a contender from the Irish Open. Patrick Harrington has definitively ruled himself out of the running, though soundings had been made in recent years to Patrick Harrington from, I don't know what particular political party, but maybe just people obviously going around, the Rathfarnham area, which seems to be quite popular right now, considering, you know, Jim Gavin is very much in the mix. Maybe it'll be Paul McGinley next that they go talking to. Who knows? But Patrick Harrington has said no, not for him. Not willing to cut back on the amount of golf that he plays in other parts of the world, and not willing to tone down his opinions on pretty much everything. Not confident enough with his vocabulary, Oscailga, and has said thanks, but no thanks. As I said to Harrington, though, what a compliment that you're even, people are going, you might be good at that.
Be a great figurehead for the country, I think. I think everybody would see that. But I do think if Patrick Harrington's out of the race, then what sports person are we going to put up against Jim Gavin so that we can, as a sporting community, dominate the presidential race? Let the political community take a back seat.
That's a good question.
Yeah, is it, I don't know. Is it Sonia O'Sullivan, is she any interest?
I mean, only one way to find out.
Yeah.
I mean,
not sure. Doorstepper there, Gavin Riley, if you're listening.
After this week, Hamer. If all goes well.
Not an Irish citizen.
Well, we got honorary by the end of this.
Well, Patrick Harrington was the only one who was asked about it in his press conference today. Some surprise at Shane Lowry. Well, maybe at this stage in his career, it's not overly surprising.
He's just passed the 35
exactly.
age limit.
Yeah, so I could give him another 14 years and he might be in the mix. One of the interesting things that I found about watching Shane Lowry speak to the assembled media today, I know that there's a one-on-two coming later on, yourself and Gary, we're speaking
I
to Shane.
I feel like there's a tone to all of his commentary about the work and the assembled media down at these golf
I think you're
all
a parrot. paranoid person.
All he has seen so far is there seems to be a lot of free food and a lot of sitting around going on in this place.
What was he speaking to?
If he wasn't speaking to the assembled media, what do we call them?
It was more your tone, Owen, I think.
I feel like you're imagining that tone. About three times when Owen has introduced the work you've done, you've given me a look, and I kind of am confused by what the look is.
Well, I was just going to bring up the fact that he was asked a question about his favourite golf course in Ireland. And obviously, Portrush came to mind immediately. And his answer, I suppose, it's not exactly a massive surprise, but his answer was Portmarnock, which I just thought was a good nugget to bring up to people who weren't lucky enough to be in the room earlier on.
And aren't part of the assembled media.
Yes, correct.
Well, you will find all of that, I think, Owen, in one article, because it was one journalist who asked everybody who came into the press conference, what was your favourite golf course? So he's in Ireland, so he's obviously putting together a little catalogue. Do you want the Rory McIlroy
one?
This guy's work. Rory said Royal County Down.
Fair enough.
Which is where the Irish Open was last year, and where he went very close to winning. Padraig Harrington. Oh, I'm trying to think. Padraig said he always, if it's a parkland course, if he's going to Adair Manor, if he mentions he's going to Adair Manor, his wife says, I'm coming too. So if he wants to play golf a lot, he'll always go to Adair Manor. Otherwise, he might come here because he feels that the test that this provides is the one that's closest to what he faces in America more often than not.
That is interesting. When you talk to the golfers and you listen to what they're saying about this course, they're all unbelievably complimentary about it. As a spectator, as a patron, I mean, it's only been a couple of years since we've last been here at the K Club.
I love that we've started this now.
Yeah. It does seem to be right up there in terms of the great courses to host the Irish Open.
Yeah, it is. I think the quality of parkland courses in this country is probably something we don't talk about a lot because we are renowned for Lynx golf. And, you know, that was touched on by Rory in his press conference as well, that there's a lot of people that feel an Irish Open should always be held on a Lynx golf course, and there's a lot of speculation that next year it will be back in a Lynx golf course down at Trump Doon Beg, which is the rumour that's been going around for several months now, and I wouldn't be surprised if that was confirmed over the next little while. Part of the issue that they have with, you know, the Lynx courses at the moment is it's quite a sacrifice for a course that just has an 18-hole course to host an Irish Open, because you're basically shutting your course for members and visitors for several weeks around it. One of the great things here at the K Club is that they have two quality courses. So the North Course, which is the Ryder Cup course from 2006, which is where they're going to play this week, is a proper championship test. And then the South Course, where the Women's Irish Open is going to take place next year. So, yeah, I think there's a quality here and at Adair that is very close when you talk to the Irish players to anything that they will face when they're on the circuit in America. And also, there's a huge amount of space here, so there's a big championship village, there's grandstands, there's all the infrastructure that you need as well to host a tournament of this size when you're going to have thousands upon thousands of patrons coming in.
Yeah, the other thing is that there is a good international flavour to this week. There is no Sergio Garcia, unfortunately, no Ryder Cup, no Irish Open for Sergio, it turns out, but we will hear a little later on in the next hour from the likes of Brooks Koepka, who's here, Tyrrell Hatton, who's here. Tyrrell Hatton on a quest to find good Guinness, which actually should be quite easy for him this week. So I'm not sure what the general recommendation is for Strafford, but I presume
well, there's the Strafford Inn, I think. I don't know if there's more than one pub in Strafford. There is the Strafford Inn, which is right in the centre of the village. Most of the players are staying in the hotel here, and I'm sure they can come up here to the clubhouse and sample as well. He sticks to just the three. Mm-hmm. Following Tyrrell is quite the experience because he runs hot. Always is the strange thing. You can't judge anything when you're watching Tyrrell Hatton from his demeanor while the ball is in the air, because he can be very, very angry, and then you watch the ball drop 3 feet from the hole, and you're like, what's... And during my interview with Tyrrell Hatton, I did ask him, because I came home to my children watching a YouTube video of Tyrrell Hatton's greatest expletives and outbursts, which was extensive. And he's more than happy to sort of indulge, and I asked, what hole is the best one to go to if you want to get the full Tyrrell Hatton experience? And he pointed out the ninth, which is just over to our left hand side here, because there's two trees right in the middle of the fairway, which he said, it's quite frustrating when you hit a wonderful drive straight down the middle and there's just two trees planted right in the middle of it.
We stood on the ninth fairway today and nothing came true for, I would say, close to half an hour. So, and then we kind of looked at the handicaps of the players, of the pro-am players that were coming through, and they were significantly lower than the players beforehand. Yeah, so.
And the ones that
they got into some trouble.
The ones that had gone beforehand were Johnny Sexton and Josh Van Der Fleer and Dan Sheehan. So they had absolutely flown through the course. Unbelievable golfers, all three.
Yeah, really, really good. I mean, again, we stood on the green and watched their approach shots in, all from the same place, with the professional that they're playing with, whose name escapes me. And three players on the green, one off the green, and they walked up, one of them stitched. You're like, oh, the pro. You see what they could do? This must be an easy shot in. They go up, Josh Van Der Fleer runs up onto the green, marks his ball, which is, what, 8 feet from the hole?
Yeah.
Johnny's on the green. Sheehan hits an amazing shot with too much spin, so it goes just onto the fringe, and the professional is off at the side chipping up, obviously for an easy up and down because they're unbelievable. But, yeah.
Yeah, Bundyaki also out on the course today.
We didn't see much golf from him, actually.
No, just
there's definitely a level of quality now, because there was once upon a time when maybe, you know, we would have played in these events where News Talk representatives would have played, and some had very difficult experiences.
Who?
I was before my time, but anytime anyone I go to a pro-am, the story comes up of the noise that was heard on the tee when a member of News Talk staff hit their tee shot, and the noise was something like as it went straight for somebody's head.
Yeah.
And even today I'm watching at times in some of the holes, and there's like, and again, most of them can play golf and there's some high handicaps, but still can, you know, hit a golf ball. But if there's 50 people around you when you're hitting a golf ball, there's a different type of pressure. And I'm like, do not be in anybody's eye line.
A lot of pressure. I stood at, like, you know, off the tee box, behind the ropes, perfectly, like, normal place to stand at a golf tournament. But stood at a place and I'm like, I'm watching amateurs here. I would never stand right here on a golf course that I was playing at. This is a dangerous position. I'm like, is this safe? Is this safe? And then, of course, you know, those lads are mainly pretty good, unfortunately.
Yeah, they were.
But maybe fortunately.
Who won it? You told us who finished second.
The winners were Robert Hissam, Ahmed Tayeb, and Paddy Harrington Jr. were the three, with, of course, Johnny Vegas / Tom McKibben.
Paddy Harrington Jr., I don't know anything about his golf game, so I'm talking purely from guesswork here, but he sounds like a bandit. He's playing off.
I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
He's playing off 17 or 18.
Sorry, if there's one other thing I know about the golfing community is that they can be quite litigious.
Yeah.
And well, I'm fairly sure calling someone a bandit is.
It's a joke.
What I will say about Paddy Harrington, who was playing off a decent handicap, I will always remember Padraig, you know, giving some great life advice, as is his wont. And he was often asked about, you know, the kids growing up and would he be a sort of tiger parent and putting a lot of pressure. And he always said about Paddy, the one thing I wanted is that he just had a swing, because he's going to get a lot of opportunities to play in events like this. I just want him to look like a golfer. I want him to be able to stand up and have a nice swing, whether he's any good or whether he wants to dedicate his life to it or anything like that. And clearly, he's got himself a swing.
Yeah. What a class attitude.
32 under is where they finished, as I say, alongside Jonathan Vegas and Tom McKibben. So not a bad couple of pros for them to be following around for the 18 holes earlier on. Now, let's get to the news round. And the news round is with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. Cameron Hill, you are beginning with matters to do with football.
Yes, Tallaght Stadium will serve as Shelburne's designated home venue for the league phase of the Conference League. That's according to the 42 this evening. The Reds had hosted all of the home legs of their qualifying campaign at Tulka Park, of course, but the venue does not meet UEFA requirements for this phase of the competition. The Aviva Stadium had also been floated as a potential home venue, but they will have to play their games at the One Ground. Joe O'Brien's side will then thus host Premier League outfit Crystal Palace, Swedish club Häcken, and Drita of Kosovo in the league phase at Tallaght Stadium. Meanwhile, Republic of Ireland assistant coach John O'Shea believes the squad are fully focused as they set off on their bid to qualify for next year's World Cup. Hamer Halgrimson's side begin with the visit of Hungary to the Aviva Stadium on Saturday before a trip to Armenia next Tuesday. Now, Ireland have lost the opening two games of their last four campaigns, but O'Shea backs the team to make a solid start this time around.
You have that confidence in the group now of how they've started in with their league form. Lots of the squad in a positive frame of mind, even in terms of transfer windows and stuff, players getting moves, and now the minds are settled and fully focused. And then obviously how players have started the season, I think you're hoping that there's a freshness in the team on Saturday to have that momentum. Listen, we know we haven't been hiding the fact that it's quick in terms of September, October, November. previously they've been over yearly periods, 18 months in different stages. So to have it so fast like that, we know it's imperative you do get off to a good start, and you want teams chasing you rather than the other way about.
Yeah, we will have more on this on the football show after 9 o'clock. We'll hear from John O'Shea in more depth, and Caoimhín Kelleher also speaking ahead of the game against Hungary on Saturday. Now, you've got some League of Ireland news, Cameron.
Yeah, transfer news today. Finn Harps goalkeeper Oisín Cooney has completed a move to Premier League side Burnley. The Premier League club won't pay an upfront fee for the teenager, but the deal includes a fee if he breaks into the first team at Turf Moor. Finn Harps will also be entitled to a sell-on fee should Cooney be sold by Burnley.
Minimum salaries then, some news on this.
Yeah, so minimum salaries for the top two tiers of professional women's football in England are being introduced for the first time this season. It's one of the requirements brought in by WSL Football, the company that oversees England's professional leagues. The minimum level hasn't been disclosed yet, but it's been described as a full-time wage.
As the Off the Ball golf/football correspondent, Nathan, this is your bumper weekend of sport. Mm. What's your plan Saturday?
My plan Saturday is to come down to the Irish Open and then about 5:30 hot footed to the Aviva Stadium.
What time will play finish on Saturday?
Presumably by 5:30 on. generally before they have on the Saturday, when there's been a big match on the Saturday night, sort of brought forward tea times to make sure that everybody can go and get there. So I hope that what I'm looking for is the Irish to sort of start mid-tier heading into the weekend and then have a great Saturday so they can, you know, get out among the later groups on Sunday. Yeah, it's going to be a big day, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly. We'll discuss the optimism levels before Saturday. I think generally it's all been kind of fairly sprightly. And then the more we have these conversations, the more we're like, hold on a minute, we're the Republic of Ireland. We've been covering this team for a number of years and maybe we shouldn't feel like this, but maybe that's just...
We're refusing to learn our lessons. And every now and then we remind ourselves of the fact that we always feel like this in September.
Yeah.
I think listen to the football show. I think myself and Nathan have a little bit more positivity than even we were expecting.
Yeah, I think that's the case. Cameron, you have news of Gaelic Games?
Yeah, Tipperary GAA is mourning the passing of four-time All-Ireland winning hurler Sean McLaughlin, the third of Sarsfield clubman lined out for the Premier County between 1958 and 1969. He helped Tip dominate intercounty hurling from 61 to 65 when they lifted Liam McCarthy on four separate occasions.
Now on to the tennis at Flushing Meadows.
Yeah, the semi-finals lineup will be finalised at the US Open today. It's a repeat of the Wimbledon women's final when Iga Swiatek takes on Amanda Anisimova on Arthur Ashe later. The other quarterfinal sees Carolina Mukova against two-time champion Naomi Osaka. The two-time winner is bidding to reach her first Grand Slam final since her Australian Open triumph in 2021. Despite struggling to return to form in recent years, Osaka maintains that she never contemplated quitting.
Honestly, not close at all. I don't know if that means like I like pain or something, but it's one thing to like say it, but I think to actually do it, to like hang up my racket for me permanently would be a very scary thing. You know, I've been playing this sport since I was 3. I tell people it's like breathing air to me. Like I wouldn't really know what to do. But granted, I'm really grateful to be here now, and the thought of not playing anytime soon is something that hasn't crossed my mind.
Meanwhile, in the men's draw, Alex de Minaur has taken the opening set against Felix Auger-Aliassime, but the Canadian has struck back in the second set and now has broken de Minaur in that one, so plenty going on in that match. While later tonight, defending champion Yannick Sinner takes on his fellow Italian Lorenzo Musetti for a place in the final four.
Right, last week on the show we did a piece about the relationship between Palestinian and Israeli, specifically boycotts, and how that pertains to sport. The conclusion from our piece was that there's been really no knock-on impact in the world of sport and what needs to change. Maybe we've seen one of the first signs today, Cameron, of how things might change.
Maybe, Owen, because today's 11th stage of the Vuelta España was cut short due to a pro-Palestinian protest at the finish line. The 157-kilometre route started and finished in Bilbao today, but towards the end of today's racing, organisers announced over the radio that the stage would be concluded 3 kilometres early. Now, hundreds of people had blocked the peloton during the opening kilometres of the stage, and this year's edition has faced significant disruption from protesters in recent days, with the Israel Premier Tech team their main target.
Yeah, Israel Premier Tech, the team of Chris Froome, in fact. So very interesting to see if that continues. I suspect it will over the next couple of stages at the Vuelta. Finally then, Cameron, you have some rugby news.
Yeah, Scotland head coach Gregor Townsend has extended his contract until the end of the 2027 Rugby World Cup in Australia. He's already the longest serving boss of the national team in the professional era after taking over in 2017. Townsend, whose deal was due to expire next April, will lead Scotland in his 100th game in charge during the 2026 Six Nations.
Cameron Hill, thank you very much for tonight's news round. As I say, there's loads of content to come over the next 90 minutes from the K Club, and speaking to a couple of the golfers who are going to take to the course over the next few days. Nathan, one of the things that we need to ask you before we go there is your tips for this weekend. Like, who's actually going to win this tournament?
God damn it.
Oh, he's got out the spreadsheet.
God damn it. I haven't had the time to sit and properly think about this. Grant Forrest was a name that Gary Murphy mentioned to me, who played well here a couple of years ago, and I think is, you know, decent price. And I think it was Daniel Hillier was the other name he said, who were sort of two European tour players, two outsiders. I think the way the course is set up this week and how difficult it's going to be with the rain and the rough, I think it will suit Rory, and I think he's going to get himself in the mix and give himself a chance. I wouldn't be surprised if Tristan Lawrence, who won last week, goes close again as well, but I definitely think that Rory will be there in contention on Sunday.
He should, like, he would finish ahead of most of this field in any game, like if they were all playing on a PGA Tour event, you know, or on in a major, for example. Rory would find a way over 4 days to be ahead of all of these. It is funny, isn't it, that you kind of he doesn't automatically win. Or is beaten by a Koepka or a Shane or someone like that who can kind of live with him week in, week out. But it doesn't work that way. Like,
no, it's not tennis where when you get to the top, you just beat all the guys or girls below you all of the time. So many of these, you know, there's probably half the field that can go and have a ridiculously good week and beat you by a couple of shots. But the one thing is, if a lot of those players, if Rory McIlroy is on their shoulder, are going to wilt and they're going to really feel it. And like, the other thing is, if McIlroy's in contention, it's just such a different weekend around here. Like, the buzz of him in 2016, and remember the way he finished in 2016, one of the shots of his life where they have the plaque down on the 16, 273 yards away, and then eagle on 18 with the entire country watching, was just insane. So something like that this week would be good.
It does feel as well that since the Team Europe Ryder Cup announcement, there's just a greater focus about the likes of Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy this week. I mean, with McIlroy in particular, he 100% knew he was obviously going to be on the team. Shane Lowry probably knew he was going to be there as well. But just having the announcement, it kind of feels like, right, time to zone in. We've got a finite amount of weeks before we have to be fully prepared for this thing. And they really, really want to win this.
Well, their 2 weeks that are coming up are two tournaments that they both won before. So they go to Wentworth after this, where they both have really good records. And then what's going to happen is, on either Sunday night or the Monday, they're going to all fly, the entire European team are going to fly to New York to Bethpage for 2 days for a bit of practice and a bit of team bonding and all of that. And like, what an incredibly exciting
Sarah Hatton be having 3 points that night for sure.
Exciting couple of weeks ahead of them. It's just a shame. Look, the one, and we'll talk a lot more about, you know, the real positives of this week, is that the Ryder Cup selection maybe didn't go on till after this week, and that you would have had at the very least all of the leading European contenders, and you would have had Rasmus, the defending champion, is not here, Rasmus Hjøgaard, who's played a lot of weeks in a row, you know, his brother Nikolai, Matt Wallace, never mind even getting maybe a lot of the European team here this week as well, who are, you know, coming off a long season in America. And you would love the Irish Open to get back to that position where, never mind the best Europeans, that you're getting some of the best Americans over as well. But look, Rory McIlroy is still the number one draw in golf. Every golf tournament in the world, if you ask them one player you want in your field, he is the one.
Well, we will hear from Rory McIlroy after the break. We are live from the members' room in the clubhouse on the Palmer course at the K Club. Nathan and Gary and Fionn have been chatting to Rory McIlroy. We'll play that after the break. And before that, the cash machine.
The news round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.